from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. It's actually good to be back in Washington, D.C. after spending the last 2.5 weeks in Israel. My thanks to Russ for filling in for me yesterday and Monday. I'll talk more about my time in the Middle East a little later here on Washington Watch. But first, breaking news out of North Korea. 3 U.S. citizens being held prisoner in a labor camp are reportedly out, fulfilling yet another demand by President Trump prior to the meeting with the North Korean dictator. We'll talk about this and the historic shift taking place on the Korean Peninsula with Southeast Asia expert Gordon Chang later here on Washington Watch. Also, Republican lawmakers with control of the Iowa State House fast-tracked a bill earlier today that would ban most abortions once a heartbeat is detected, usually around 6 weeks of pregnancy. Sending this bill, which would be the nation's most pro-life law, to the governor's desk. In just a moment, we'll talk with Congressman Steve King of Iowa, the author of the federal version of this bill, later here on in just a moment here on Washington Watch. And this, a new study taken in 2017 finds over 60% of 8th grade public school students in America were not proficient in reading, and nearly 70% were not proficient in mathematics. Raises the question, what are they proficient in? Well, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News, is covering this story, and he'll be here with the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, if you wanting to know if it's really me, it is me. Just a little overcoming a little cold there. I got sick in the Middle East, but doing much better and trying to work on getting my voice completely back. But you can understand me. All right, if you want to keep up with me on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Okay, after a long and contentious debate that went into late last night in the wee hours of this morning, the Iowa legislature passed a bill to prohibit abortions after an unborn baby has a detectable heartbeat. The bill, as I mentioned earlier, is now on the way to the governor. Joining us now is Congressman Steve King. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Iowa and serves on the Committee on the Judiciary, and he is a member of the Pro-Life Caucus, and he has a federal version of this bill currently introduced in Congress. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks a lot for having me back on, Tony. I appreciate it.
Well, this bill that your colleagues in Iowa have passed, I understand this is modeled on your bill, which has 171 co-sponsors in the House here in Washington.
Well, yes, it is, Tony. And it started. This started clear back a few days before Phyllis Schlafly passed away. And she asked that I draft a heartbeat bill, introduce it in Congress, and push to get it passed because we were anticipating a transition in the United States Supreme Court with the potential election of Donald Trump, and then those appointments to the court, first of which we've seen with Neil Gorsuch. And so I did that, and in the process of doing so, of course, I talked to the state legislators, and through those conversations, they decided to pick it up. We did help with that language, but the final draft was theirs. They introduced it into the state Senate, and in a very short period of time, with only 24 minutes of debate, the Iowa Senate passed the heartbeat bill in a very clean way, and went over to the House, where it met a much more difficult time over in the House. So we spent about 7 weeks working that, but excellent leadership in the House. And the membership along the way in the House, there were just a lot of moral decisions made along the way. And in the end, this glory belongs to God. And the folks that did the work in the Iowa General Assembly brought the most consequential piece of legislation through there, I think, that's ever been passed in the history of the state of Iowa.
Well, I think it's a significant milestone, not just for Iowa, but I think for the country. Now, I first have to ask the question. Governor Kim Reynolds, will she sign the bill? She says she's pro-life. She has a pro-life record. She's not yet made a comment on the bill. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I'm very confident in Governor Kim Reynolds. She has been a good friend for a long time, more than 20 years. And I personally like her. I respect her. She has said that she's proud to be a member of the most pro-life administration in the history of the state of Iowa. I agree with that. There's no signal except that we expect that she will sign it. She hasn't said publicly that she will because she doesn't weigh in on legislation until it gets to her desk and she gets a chance to review it in its final form. But at this point, I would say my judgment of her faith, her character, and also the politics in this state, I very much expect her to sign the heartbeat legislation. And I expect it could actually happen this week because they're aiming to gavel out for the and close down the General Assembly, sign a die, as we say, and by about Friday. And I think she'll want to have a bill signing ceremony before the legislators have to come back to town in order to do so.
So that brings up the next issue, and I hope you're right, and I think there are many anticipate that she will sign the bill. Congressman Steve King, this then sets up what the opponents say, that this puts itself on track for a Supreme Court ultimately being decided by the Supreme Court.
It does, and we've anticipated that all along. The legislation is written to challenge Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And if one looks at the pattern of the legislation that has gone forward over the last 45 years on the abortion issue, there's a school of thought, and it's not a very broad one within the pro-life community, but a school of thought that believes that that standard of viability, which emerged from the Planned Parenthood versus Casey case in 1992, is something we should never challenge. We could get close to it, but never challenge this measure of viability, being able to survive outside the womb, according to the Supreme Court. We contend instead, and I think it's almost universal among the pro-life community, life begins at the moment of conception or fertilization. And So if we're not willing to challenge that court, then we have to be willing to accept the idea of a million abortions a year going on in perpetuity. And we just are not going to accept that. And we believe that there will be likely another appointment to the Supreme Court sometime within the next year or so. And in that case, if we get another justice like Justice Gorsuch, we're looking at what we think would be a 5-4 decision in favor of life and in support of the United States Constitution and the 14th Amendment, which prioritizes life.
Well, I think the idea that some have that, you know, we just got to kind of work within the confines of what the Supreme Court has decided on this issue of life, or any issue for that matter. I think people need to understand the court is just one of three institutions. We've got the executive, we've got the legislative, and we've got the courts. And I think we have a right as an American people to challenge wrongly decided decisions by the courts. The Congress has the right to do it. State legislatures have the right to do that. And so I think it's never it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. I've always said you got to have a champion that will go out there and push these things, work to build the coalitions, the consensus needed. Obviously, that's taken place in Iowa. A lot of that is due to your leadership. You're doing the same thing here in Washington, D.C. I would have to think that this would put some momentum behind the federal bill.
I think it clearly does. And one of the things I was concerned about is if we hadn't succeeded in Iowa, it would have probably provided an anchor to drag for the federal bill as well. So it does provide momentum. And, you know, Iowa's not the most conservative state in the union, nor the most pro-life state in the union. We've been a purple state for a long time, and we've only had a Republican win Iowa in three times in my recent memory for president. And that was, of course, Donald Trump carried it in 2016, George Bush's reelect in 2004, and Ronald Reagan, and not in 1980, but 1984. So we have been a purple state swinging back and forth. And nationally, what is happening is ultrasounds and the dialogue in America, bonding with these babies before they're born, being able to watch them move and squirm and suck their thumb in the womb and listen to their heartbeats, has gotten to the hearts of America, and America is becoming more and more pro-life day by day, even to the extent of this heartbeat legislation that we have before Congress right now. By our polling, 55% of Democrats support the heartbeat bill. And so I was able to tell the Iowa Republicans who come from some kind of marginal districts that nobody is going to lose their seat in reelection for voting for a heartbeat bill because the Democrats won't attack you for it. They're attacking their own then because their majority of them support this. By the way, 86% of Republicans and 61% of independents also support heartbeat. So I'm exhilarated, Tony. I'm toning it down for Tony today, but this happened about 2:15 this morning, and we had people watching that debate all the way through and texts going back and forth, and I had the opportunity to congratulate so many of them that did so much, and I know the role that they played, and I'm so proud of them. And the network that was built 20-some years ago when I first went into the Iowa State Senate determined to rewrite the parental notification bill so that it was only a parent or a legal guardian that was notified if a minor child was seeking an abortion. That was a fight, and I didn't win it 20 or 21 years ago. But today we have a heartbeat bill that's passed through the Iowa House and Senate on its way to the governor's desk with every expectation that it will become law sometime in the next few days.
Well, great job, Congressman Steve King, and thanks so much for joining us this afternoon to talk about it. And we'll be watching this and the developments that come from it very closely.
Thank you so much, Tony, and thanks for all your work and your prayers, and we have them for you as well.
All right. Thanks so much. Congressman Steve King of Iowa talking about the Iowa Heartbeat Bill. Now, there's been a couple of other states that have passed it. North Dakota passed the Heartbeat Bill. Arkansas, the federal court struck both those laws down. Now, under the Congressman King talked about a change in the court. We are anticipating another retirement from the court. Is it going to come this year? Don't know. But a case like this, usually it's going to take a while to get all the way up to the Supreme Court. So the probability that there will be a new justice on the court by the time this gets to the court is very high. And just pointing out something that Congressman King said, and I think the left, they should be thinking about this, because ever since Barack Obama was elected and began to push Planned Parenthood and the pro-abortion agenda, beginning in 2010, you began to see states push back. And in the last decade, well, 8 years, we've had more pro-life pieces of legislation pass at the state level than all of the other time since Roe v. Wade. And that's because the left has been, you know, I shouldn't say the whole left, it's just the special interest, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, pushing this agenda, and the American people were pushing back. And now what I think is good is they're not just pushing back for, you know, what was acceptable status quo, but they're pushing back for what is constitutionally solid and right, and that is that every human being, every child is deserving of respect and to be welcomed into the world and protected under our laws. And again, I applaud the citizens of Iowa, and I encourage other folks that have that passion not to grow weary in well-doing, but to fight for what is right. So many things still need to be done in this country. I was at a briefing at the White House earlier today looking at some of the things that have happened in the first couple of years and first couple of years of this administration and what is yet to be done. We'll be talking about that in the days ahead. All right. When we come back, major developments on the Korean Peninsula, agreements between North and South, and now three U.S. citizens being held for years have reportedly been released. We'll talk with Southeast Asia expert Gordon Chang right here on Washington Watch when we return. Don't go away. We're back with more after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008 or go to TonyPerkins.com.
God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, back in Washington, D.C., sitting here in the chair behind the microphone. Good to be back. All right, breaking news this afternoon. Three U.S. citizens being held for years in a labor camp in North Korea have reportedly been released. This was one of the demands prior to the meeting between President Donald Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Now, you look at this, you look at the Declaration for Peace and Prosperity and Unification signed by both the leaders of North and South Korea. Major developments happening on the Korean Peninsula. Joining us now, Southeast Asia expert Gordon Chang. He's the author of The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. He lived in China and Hong Kong for almost two decades. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much, Tony.
All right, Gordon, what are we seeing? Something historic here?
Well, certainly something historic, and we've had one historic event after another for the last 12 or 13 days, starting with North Korea's announcement of a suspension of missile and nuke testing and the closing of their site at Punggye-ri, which is where they've detonated all six of their devices. Really what we're seeing right now is the result of a more muscular U.S. policy. Not only have there been threats on North Korea, but more important, the Trump administration has imposed unilateral sanctions and gone to the U.N. and toughened the sanctions from that body. So that has convinced the North Koreans that they've got to come to terms with the United States. That's a good development. There can be a lot of backsliding, of course. This is North Korea, after all. But nonetheless, we now have a pathway to an enduring solution.
I mean, I think, I would be skeptical if we were talking about one or two concessions that they're making. But, I mean, to see him along with the South Korean president and that agreement that they signed and their time together, the photo op, all of that. And then, you know, the releasing of these three prisoners, which have been an issue of contention for quite some time, suggested he really does, I think, want to come to the table and have a positive outcome with Donald Trump.
Yes, what's really stunning is that he apparently said to Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, that there were only two things that he wanted for him to give up his nuclear arsenal. One of them was a pledge by the United States not to attack North Korea, And the other thing is the United States to sign a peace treaty to formally end the Korean War, turning the armistice into a permanent solution. If we had come to that after 5 years of negotiation, we would call that a major victory. But to get to that position where Kim would say that before he even meets President Trump really is quite stunning. Now, of course, we should have a lot of skepticism about what Kim's plans ultimately are. But what he's done is he's created a marker by which President Trump can hold him accountable. And that is, I think, what we're seeing right now. The United States has the leverage to push North Korea in ways that it doesn't want to go. And so all I'm asking is for the president, our president, to make sure that he does use the elements of American power to make sure that we do get the disarmament of North Korea and some of the other things which are essential for us.
Now, Gordon, he's as I understand, he's said he's welcomed the international community to come in and inspect the fact that they are disassembling their nuclear program.
Yes. Well, what he's done so far is Punggye Ri is mentioned where they've had their six detonations. There are a number of mountains there. One of those mountains is geologically unstable. That's the one where they've actually set off their nukes. That's Mount Montop. If he were to set off another detonation there, the place probably would just collapse and release a radioactive cloud over North Korea and China. But they've got another couple tunnels which may or may not be geologically okay. But in any event, what they're doing right now is pulling the cabling out of the tunnels. They have invited the United States to witness the decommissioning of the site. That's good. We saw something similar in 2008 when his father, Kim Jong-il, blew up the cooling tower for their only reactor. And then the year after that, they walked away from the six-party talks. Now, it's up to President Trump to make sure that they don't use that playbook this time, that they don't backtrack on their promises. But I think that President Trump understands that. He's got a national security advisor who isn't going to take very much gruff from the North Koreans. That's a good thing.
Gordon Chang, we're a long ways from where we were just 3 months ago in terms of the relationships between the United States, North Korea, and South Korea. Does President Trump deserve some credit in this?
Oh, well, certainly. President Trump is the one thing, one reason why a decade-long status quo, which was really frozen, was broken up. And once there was this movement of balls on the pool table, all sorts of things, and some good things have happened. Andrei Longkov, who is a leading North Korea expert based in South Korea, has basically said, look, the reason why we are at this place is because China, North Korea, and South Korea changed their policies dramatically at the end of last year. And the reason they changed their policies was because they were all afraid of going to war. Now, Longkov didn't say this, but of course, the only reason why those countries thought that there could be a war is because of what Trump was doing. And so clearly, those threats, along with the sanctions enforcement, which I mentioned, were what got us to this place. We've got a long way to go, Tony, but, you know, at this particular time, things are moving in the right direction.
Very, very good. Gordon Chang, 60 seconds. I want to ask one final question. Is there a connection between the Iran nuclear deal that the president is looking at in terms of nixing or modifying and North Korea? Two separate issues, or is there a connection?
Oh, there's definitely a connection. Both the Iranian and the North Korean nuclear weapons program are joined at the hip. Some people say that it's one program in two separate locations. The Iranians pay the North Koreans somewhere between $2.5 to $3 billion a year. So, you know, there's no question that they're connected. And President Trump going after the Iran nuclear deal of 2015 does have an effect on the North Koreans.
Gordon Chang, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Gordon Chang, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. There are some who are saying, well, the president doesn't deserve any credit. This was going to happen anyway. This is amazing. People do not want to acknowledge that President Trump is having an effect and is being felt around the world. All right, coming up next, remember the TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? How about being smarter than an eighth grader? Well, according to a new report, that wouldn't be saying much. We'll talk with Terry Jeffrey of CNS News with a shocking new report. Don't go away. We're back with more after this. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you'd like to be a part of making sure that Washington Watch continues in your area, if you want to partner with us, find out more about how you can do that, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, test results released by the U.S. Department of Education find 65% of the 8th graders in American public schools in 2017 were not proficient in reading, and 67% were not proficient in mathematics. Joining us now is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNS News. He's been investigating these findings and has written about it. You can read it by going to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Obviously, this was something that was shocking to you. You wrote about it. You pull them back the numbers. The numbers tell a pretty frightening story.
It is. It's a very sad story. And this is one thing, actually, that the Federal Department of Education does that I think is worthwhile. Periodically, they give these National Assessment of Educational Progress tests in basic subjects like math and reading to public school and private school students all around the country. And the latest were the reading and math tests given last year, as you mentioned. And it's really remarkable. They've now published the results. And as you said, 67% of the 8th graders in public schools in the United States were not proficient in math. 65% were not proficient in reading. And, Tony, when you look at some specific urban jurisdictions, for example, Detroit, in the city of Detroit, in the public schools, only 5% of the 8th graders were proficient in math, and only 7% were proficient in reading. So 93% of the kids who go through 8 years in public schools in the city of Detroit are not taught to be proficient in reading by the public schools there.
Well, if my reading is correct, it looks like my home state didn't do too well in math among the states. Louisiana public elementary schools did the worst in teaching students math. What explanations are being given?
Well, you know, For one thing, these tests have not gotten a lot of publicity, and that does not surprise me. I don't think the liberal press wants to talk about it. But you're right, in Louisiana, in the public schools in Louisiana, only 19% of the eighth graders were proficient in math, which made it the 50th of all 50 states. New Mexico was the second worst, with 20% being proficient in math. You know, I think it's pretty obvious that the public schools in this country are not working at teaching the basic things that a kid needs to learn in school. Now, personally, I believe there's two parts of an education, and they're integrated. One part is learning information, learning how to do mathematics, learning how to read, and then learning mm-hmm. the basics of Western civilization and the basics right. of math and science and technology once you have those basic skills. But the other side of it, in my view, Tony, is that schools need to instill values in children. We need a certain amount of virtue in a country in order for a republic to be maintained. And the public schools, as we've moved forward in time, have moved further and further and further away from that mission. In fact, I think in a lot of ways they're working against it by teaching kids that are wrong. So I believe we're at a point in American history where we have public schools that aren't effectively teaching kids basics like reading and writing, but on the other side, they're teaching them things that are wrong. And this needs to be fixed.
I could not agree more. What they're actually doing is they're taking away from those core educational components that are needed, increasingly needed, I should say, in a global economy. And they're replacing them with something that actually attacks those virtues you talked about. I mean, we just had last week the sex ed sit out day, when we're looking at this graphic material that is being given to our children on sex ed. We spend more time talking about gender, you know, what gender they want to be, and all of the sexual agenda of the Human Rights Campaign and Planned Parenthood, and the test results show what's happening as a result of that.
Right. If you are traditional parents and you're trying to raise your kids to believe and the traditional and correct understanding of what is right and wrong, you're going to be at war with the public school in your community more likely than not. If a kid comes from a broken family where his father has gone away and deserted him, or he doesn't have a mother, and his family is not instilling in those values, he's going to be taught the wrong things by the public schools. And my view is the way to fix this is to have universal school choice. Liberals don't want it. The Republicans don't talk about it enough. But I looked at I looked for my syndicated column, not my news story, at the amount of money that is spent by state and local governments on public schools in America. And when you do the math, it's more than $610 billion in the latest year they have available, 2015, that state and local governments.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what it boils down to is, in this country, where the government, state and local government, is spending more than $13,000 per pupil for elementary and high schools. If you gave every parent in this country who has a kid in grammar school or high school a voucher for $13,000, they could get a good education for their child outside the public school system.
Well, maybe they're hoping most of those parents went to the public schools and can't do the math.
Right.
Terry Jeffrey, as always, great to talk with you. And again, I appreciate the stuff you do because you focus on that stuff that nobody else is covering, which is so, so important. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, I encourage you to take a look at that, especially if your kids are in the public schools. I mean, you look at this material that's being taught to our kids, what they're being exposed to. They can't read. They can't write, and many kids are coming out of schools functionally illiterate. But yet they can tell you about sex, all that stuff. Coming back, your calls. Don't go away.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique. Not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it? It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought.
It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, we're going to take your phone calls. We've been talking about a number of things today. Talk about public schools and the lack of proficiency in reading and mathematics as a result, indicated by the National Assessment of Educational Progress. Also talking about historical shifts taking place in the Korean Peninsula. And then the heartbeat bill in Iowa passing, setting up potentially a showdown over the life issue in Roe v. Wade at the Supreme Court. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234 if you want to weigh in on any of those topics today. By the way, we'll be talking tomorrow. I don't know if you saw this. John Stenberger is going to join me. We're going to talk about the Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts announcing today they're going to be dropping boy from Scouts. So it's just going to be scouting. Scouts. I mean, they're having an identity crisis. Of course, you know, we warned of such just a few years ago. I think they should, instead of being scouting, it should be searching for who they are because they've lost their way. And it's really sad. I mean, that's a storied institution over a century of helping young boys make that transition to manhood. Sad. Anyway, we're going to talk about that tomorrow with John Stenberger, who is the chairman of Trail Life USA, a great alternative to scouting. That's tomorrow. Also, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas will be with us. And advisor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, going to be joining us as well. I know if you kept up with the program, last 2 weeks we've been in Israel. I also went this past weekend. I went to Jordan, following up with some meetings we had earlier late last year with various government officials, and discussing the issue of religious freedom, discussing the issue of the humanitarian crisis with the Syrian refugees there in Jordan. And I have to tell you, I'm impressed with what the Jordanian officials are doing, a country of about 8 million people prior to the Syrian crisis, now about 10 million, and they've absorbed those folks in many cases. Some are still in the refugee camps. It's been a tremendous strain, but they've been a good neighbor. And it is unlike many of the other Middle Eastern countries. There is certain freedoms of worship. But these countries in the Middle East are taking note of the emphasis being placed on religious freedom by the Trump administration. And it's opening up huge opportunities. And so I would encourage you folks to be praying for this moment in time where we have seen in the last, you know, decade, unprecedented persecution of religious minorities, that this could be a window of opportunity because of the leadership of the Trump administration, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, Sam Brownback, Ambassador of Large Religious Freedom, to send a message of hope and help to the persecuted minorities and bring greater stability globally. Because as we've talked about here many times, the studies show where religious freedom exists, there's economic stability, there's less of a security, a national security issue for us. So anyway. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Chris in Kansas. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's good to talk with you. Yes, I'm a teacher, and I just wanted to comment on the priority for academic excellence. I kind of got into the game later in teaching and had been teaching in private school and switched to public because of, you know, just the inability to, you know, survive on the paycheck.
Right.
But I was actually going to comment that the whole shift from academic excellence to social-emotional education is really the name of the game now. And I'm shocked to hear it in a meeting that they were listing the priorities. And academics, according to, you know, the higher-ups, was fourth on the list.
What was first, second, third?
Well, it was behavioral. It was just their remote, first and foremost, their esteem, their social, and making those relationships between staff and education and, you know, the students. I mean, that seems to be the only thing that they want to promote is, you know, they go by the method usually of, they do a structured kind of system now that's sweeping across the nation that's stoic, and according to research that, you know, it's less punitive and more affirmative, which of course as Christians we want to do, but they tend to focus on the affirmative rather than any kind of punitive. So students are coming with the message that they aren't really accountable for any consequences. And this seems to be taking the front seat to any kind of academic excellence.
That's got to be extremely frustrating as a teacher, because essentially what you're saying is the educational establishment is saying we don't need teachers, we need campfire leaders.
That's correct. I think the staff, the teacher, traditional teacher ratio to support staff is becoming so heavy loaded that, you know, we're concerned with financial. I think a lot of the financial is going towards professional development and also the support staff for behavioral and emotional issues.
Wow, amazing. Chris, thanks so much for calling in. Very, very insightful. And thank you for what you do as well as being a teacher in the public schools. I want to be very clear about this because I talk about the schools a lot. I am not a fan of government schools. All right, I would never put my kids in government schools. Never. Now, and I know that's not an option for some, okay, but you should try every option available. That said, I am grateful for folks like Chris and others who will go into these schools and be a light in the midst of darkness. It's difficult. It's like, and pastors, you should be looking for those in your congregations. This is like sending missionaries, I mean, to some of the tribal lands, you know? I mean, they're headhunters out there. But anyway, Chris, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. All right, let's go to Mark in Texas. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Mark. How you doing, Tony?
I'm good. And you?
I'm good. On my way home from work.
All right. Do you happen to be a teacher as well?
I am. I'm a 35-year veteran educator and coach in Texas. Been in the public schools most of that, but have been in the private university setting for a few years. But I actually sent your program an email, I guess this weekend or late. I think it was Saturday morning. I actually sent your program an email regarding this subject. I've sat and listened and watched for 30 plus years. Watched people vacate the public schools, Christian educators as well as Christian parents pulling their students out, their children out. And, you know, I think it's a similar solution. I don't know that it's a solution because I don't know that we're unselfish enough to change it, but it's just like any other institution in our nation. Darkness only wins when light is either withheld or removed. And, mm-hmm. you know, basically what's happening in public education across our country. It's growing dark because the light is being removed from the presence, from the hallways, the corridors of public education. And it just disturbs me a little bit that I hear much of the complaining and much of the criticism, even though it is valid. Things that are being reported are generally true. But it disturbs me that those doing the reporting and those doing the accusing are many of the same folks who have taken their life and chosen to remove their life from those very institutions. And the key is not to curse the darkness from afar. The key is to take your life back into that situation. And we'll never regain control or gain, you know, any sort of substance in the classrooms in public education until Christians stop retreating from that battlefield.
Well, Mark, I agree with
what I wanted to share.
Well, hold on. Don't go anywhere because I want to talk with you about it. Because I agree with you from a standpoint of I support Christians going into the schools to teach. I encourage, and we're working on some projects with Christians running for school boards. But where I have a problem, Mark, is I cannot in good conscience put my kids into environments. Now, it depends. There are some schools that are a little better than others, okay? So this is a very broad statement.
Absolutely.
But I'm holding in my hand a letter dated March 29, 2018. All right, this is from the Orange County Department of Education. This was sent to me by a pastor. And this was the California Healthy Youth Act. And this is about sex ed, okay? We've been talking a lot about this. This is all about the gender and expression, gender identity and all this.
Exactly.
Here, let me just read. Let me read the final paragraph. Therefore, parents who disagree with the instructional materials related to gender, gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation may not excuse their children from the instruction. However, parents are free to advise their children that they disagree with some or all of the information presented in the instructional program and express their views in these subjects to their children, end quote. Now, I'm amazed at stuff like that. And that's why people are pulling their kids out of the public schools. It's because of their go ahead.
Oh, I know. I was just agreeing. I understand completely that that's the reason. And I've even talked to many personal friends who have had to make that decision. But still, the solution remains. If we want to change the direction of those schools, we're not going to do it from the outside looking in. It's just not going to happen.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
No school board, no community is going to elect a school board member who homeschools their children or takes their children to private schools outside the district. So,
well, actually, I'll have to take issue with that. We actually elected a chairman of our school board is homeschooled his kids in my hometown.
Well, I would think that would be the exception.
Well, it's a pretty good community. Yeah.
But I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at as well.
Mark, let me say, I'm glad for where you are. And I'm glad that, especially as a coach, as one who played sports in high school, the influence of a coach is profound. So I don't think we're far apart on our view. I don't think we should abandon it, but I don't think we should put our children, when they're impressionable and they're being taught stuff contrary to our wishes as a parent, we should not subject our children to that. It creates confusion because teachers are authority figures in the lives of these children. And so I draw the line at the children, school boards, teachers, coaches. It is a mission field, and we should be encouraging Christians to go into those professions without question. So, Mark, thanks for listening. All right. Well, a lot of folks want to talk about education. Let's continue very quickly, almost out of time, but I'm going to go to Sandra in Oklahoma. Sandra, welcome to Washington Watch. Sandra, you there?
Yes. Thank you for having
me. All right, go ahead. Absolutely, go ahead. All right, Sandra, we're going to have to – you've got a really bad connection. We can't we can't hear you. Try calling us back. All right, let's go to Jimmy in Kansas. Jimmy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but go ahead.
I am so proud of our school. They were first in Common Core. Our math teacher had been there forever, and he said, I'm not doing it. And because of that, our school dominates everywhere we go. I mean, our kids are, compared to the other schools, even larger schools, almost seem like we're beyond going. I mean, we pull all the medals everywhere we go, and it's because mm-hmm. we didn't get into the, well, what I call stupidity with the Common Core. And
yeah.
So forth.
It's a good example. Yes, Jimmy, sorry, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for calling. And that's a good example. And I will say this, you know, there are districts across the country. I'm a product of public schools. I went to public school. There are school districts where parents completely control and you've got teachers, administrators willing to stand up to the bureaucrats. You know, that's a situation where you can, if you feel that you're safe, to put your kids into it. Okay. But we've got a crisis in education. The numbers show it. There's no way we can compete globally when our kids are not proficient in the basics. Now, they know all the pop culture. They know all about sexual gender and identity and how to experiment with all of that because it's being taught in the classroom. This is where parents got to step up. If your kids are there, demand to know what your kids are being taught and who's teaching it and who's producing the curriculum. And then young people coming out of college, going into college, pray about where the Lord might use you the greatest. And I can't think of a greater need, as Mark talked about and others today, than in public education, as a teacher, as a coach, as a school board member. All right, out of time, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow. Until next time, I leave you the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where it says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.